Hello, Gallatin Valley. You're listening to KGVM FM 95.9 on the radio or KGVM.org on the internet. This is Dr. Arliss Wood, psychologist, along with Suzanne Wood, speech-language pathologist, co-host of this show, Health and Happiness, presented Monday evenings at 7 p.m. and Thursday mornings at 9 a.m. Thank you for tuning in. We present programs primarily with a mental health emphasis, but many other topics related to your and my health and happiness are dealt with. Dr. Suzanne now introduces the presentation.
Edward Coke in the 1600s declared, "A man's house is his castle." It's a well-known phrase even today, but more currently from the Psychology Today magazine, an article from Lawrence Samuel, Ph.D., talks about homes and houses. And he says most of the rationale that's been assigned to buying a home has been based on money and all the financial benefits through deduction of property taxes and mortgage interest and the building of wealth through equity. But in my book, I note the psychological or emotional benefits to be had from owning a piece of land, no matter how tiny. It appears to satisfy a primal need rooted in the search for permanent shelter from the elements. There are other factors involved in the pursuit of home ownership. Some buyers perceive a home as a symbol of success, while others as a means of expressing who they are to the rest of the world. Interestingly, research tells us the usually dreaded mortgage can also offer an emotional upside. For a married couple, a 30-year commitment to pay back a loan has functioned as a symbol of the spouse's commitment to one another, as well as to the community where they've settled down. Interestingly, too, a 1992 Fannie Mae survey revealed how deeply homeownership was ingrained in Americans' consciousness. Most Americans reported that owning a home was so important that they happily would work longer hours, travel farther to their workplace, give up career opportunities, or even take a second job to own a home. There was financial, psychological, and familial security embedded in owning a home. In 2023, President Biden said as much when he issued a proclamation declaring National Home Ownership Month in June. He said, "I call upon the people of the nation to safeguard the American dream by ensuring that everyone has access to an affordable home in a community they choose." And on the personal side, when we moved here to Bozeman about 8 years ago, we found a lot in town with a perfect view of the Bridger Mountains. We asked our builder to make a house that brought the mountains right into our fireside. Michael Rosengren is a prince of builders. The cozy little house he built for us has surpassed all of our plans and hopes. He is here with his faithful co-worker and lovely wife, Shell, to talk with us about the builder's world of today and to help listeners navigate this whole process. Welcome, Shell and Michael.
Glad to be with you.
Hi, thank you for having us.
Well, Michael, I understand that you come from a long line of builders. Can you tell us how you became interested in the builder's world?
Well, I became interested by working in the summertime cleaning up the job site for my father's business, and he worked with my grandfather, Herb. So Herb and Dan built homes in the Gallatin Valley, and I started hoping to save up some money to buy a motorcycle as a young kid. That's how I got into the building.
So that gave you the money to purchase a motorcycle?
Yeah, and just wanted to be like my dad, you know.
Yeah.
Cleaning up the job site and work with my dad and my grandpa Herb.
So it wasn't just your father, it was also your grandfather who would build wonderful homes. Wow, quite a wonderful legacy. Yeah. I just wonder, you know, what you might talk to young people today about going into the building business. We'll get to that later, but you might be thinking about what you would advise young people to do in preparation for this field. It actually, there's an all-time high of 8 million of people in the construction jobs, surpassing the previous peak, and they project this publication from the Associated General Contractors that there will be 380,100 new jobs in construction by 2033. So this is a growing, flourishing field right now. Have you felt that same way about it, Michael?
Well, it definitely has its ebbs and flows. So if you're getting into construction or building just to make some money as the six-year-old kid that I was, or, you know, through my childhood, or if you're thinking more along the lines of just being an artist or a co-creator and watching a bare piece of land turn into a place where a family lives, and thinking more in the visionary builder side of things instead of just working in the construction industry, either way, I definitely see a bright future, especially as our society is going to be changing radically here with some of the technological advancements. That need for hands-on physical labor is going to continue to exist and going to be a great opportunity for a lot of people to make a really good wage and just a bright future.
I love hearing that. Yeah, because that same article points out that the average age of these workers, the craft workers building wonderful homes, is they're getting older and they're projected to finish up their career soon. So we're going to need a lot more young people to be trained in this area. And you're proposing that there's a good living that can be made building.
I think we're going to see a lot of the skilled trades really increase in their demand and the price in which, you know, they're going to be acquired.
Okay. Well, just again, speaking from a personal level, Michael Rosengren is the builder who built our home. And it's just lovely. It's just so special. All the touches, it's like Michael really is what he said. He's an artist. He's got an eye for a beautiful piece of wood or a beautiful mantle or a ceiling that's raised and windows that bring in the view. It is a very artistic undertaking, isn't it, Michael?
Yeah, that's one of my favorite parts of building a home. And with your home, I did collaborate on the design with Brett Potter of Yellowstone Architects. And it was I love collaborating with him designing homes because he has his strong suits of floor plan and traffic patterns, you know, arrangement of spaces. But I really enjoy some of the aesthetic aspects of just trying to make it a very personal, beautiful place where you hang your hat.
And comforting. And it's like you said, it's psychologically you're noting all those things that would make a heart feel comfortable and at home, because we see them here every day. And so we'll ask later in the show, but we want to be able to tell people how to get in touch with you and with Brett, because I think there's a lot of new building going on. And so, Michael, you guys build homes in the city and in the countryside, right?
Yeah, it's been a few years since I built in downtown Bozeman, but you know, that was where I grew up building, and now I largely build mountain homes, which are a little more challenging, a lot of fun, but I enjoy building a home of any size or any caliber, you know, just really enjoy the personal aspect of especially building custom homes for people's vision. And like with your home, just really trying to get that backdrop of the Pridgers just come through the window while you're sitting there by your fireplace with a warm cup of coffee or tea, just take in the morning light. It's just really special to try to capture that.
It's so special, the sunrise over the mountains. And you're so right. We sit with our coffee and enjoy it. And so I was going to ask Shell, who's with us tonight, too. Now, I understand that Michael built your house, too, Shell. So tell us, how did he do?
Oh, amazingly amazing. I tell him often that I'm just very thankful. I love our home. It's now upcoming Christmas. Thanksgiving has passed, which was wonderful. But our wood, every piece of our wood has been just so much love and thought put into it, truly. And I really do think that our home, and I think a home in general, really can potentially cement your loves and loyalties, and I see that in our home, the home that Michael built. It's really can be so special, such a place to cultivate, bringing people in and really blessing people, your own people, and then outside more family and friends. But I can't even express how much joy and gratitude I have. My own home that Michael built. Like, it's really, truly a special place that I just treasure.
And I think that brings out, again, the psychological underpinning of finding a place to live. And we know there's lots of research about homelessness and how tragic that is. So for any of us in a home, we ought to feel very grateful very often. And mm-hmm. I was going to talk, too, there's a lot of stuff out and about right now about the difficulties of home ownership. And so we thought maybe you could give us some ideas for younger people who might be renting and wanting to get into a home. Have you thought much about that, Michael?
Yeah, I have. I think it's one of the most important things a young couple could do is really set their heart and mind on home ownership. And I remember really being captivated as a young man by the old movie Far and Away. And I remember that line, you know, he longed to come from Ireland to the United States to run in the Oklahoma land race. And when they finally got their land and they put the stake in the ground there, he said, he recalled that last vision with his, or moment with his dad. And he said, a land is like a man's own soul. And there's something special about just owning a home, owning some land, and that connectivity as earthen creatures to the land. Not just having a garden and being able to eat or grow the vegetables, but then like building a place where you live and you spend your days, however mundane you think they are, kind of goes to what Shel was talking about, cementing your loves and loyalties, about, you know, those memories of waking up and having breakfast and all the different familial glories that we get to experience that seem so every day. They turn into, over and over, they turn into your childhood, they turn into your story. So yeah, I think it's one of the most important things a young couple could set their heart and mind on doing together. And it can be a very rewarding accomplishment, incredibly rewarding.
Well, a lot of sacrifice can go into that, I would say. And I would say hard work and sacrifice is, and duty and loyalty, even working alongside each other is really a beautiful thing, really beautiful.
And we've seen that in action. Shell is always there to support everything that Michael does. And I was back to our thought about buying a home. There's been a little bit of a trend pointed out lately to say, well, we should just rent and it's a little cheaper, and then we can invest that money in the stock market or whatever and make more money that way. But they then pointed out some inherent problems with that approach. That here's the kicker on the rent-buy argument. This is from Forbes. Rents will always trend upward, but house prices can take sharp drops. But even when they don't, the monthly payment on a long-term mortgage remains largely the same over all the years. Overall costs might increase with maybe some taxes or insurance, but payments are stable. So once locked in, your housing costs slip into a roughly horizontal line. So when you look at the change here, rents are going up and up and up, and it might actually end up being less expensive for people, and we have found that to be so, to actually buy and get through that part, and then you're very stable. You know just what to expect.
I was wondering, as you are a home builder and people getting their first house, I was somewhat surprised that when we were lucky enough to find you, that the cost of building the house didn't seem much different than what we had heard the cost was going to be to get into an already built house. Now, I realize there probably is a difference, but it didn't seem that way. Like, any comment on that?
Well, you might have got a really great deal. No, I'm
sure we did.
I do think that it's incredibly special to be able to design your own home and find a lot with a view and just make it your own. But sometimes it can be comparable to finding a home that's already built. But usually I would say it could be just on the upside of, you know, maybe finding an ordinary home, but some of those standout homes would be similar to building a custom home.
Would you recommend for first-time buyers that they get a fixer-upper in order to save money, or should they wait a little longer and take the plunge to get a forever home? How do you look at that?
Well, I look at that through the lens of my childhood, honestly. My dad, incredibly hard worker, and, you know, obviously a builder, and so we built a house every 2 years and sold it to avoid capital gains. And so we were moving a lot as a young family, and we built a lot of equity that way, I realize. But it does, we advocate for trying to find your quote forever home as soon as you can. But when it comes to a young couple, I think just get into the best opportunity, just try to get into a home and work to pay off that, work to make a house a home, make it special to you while you're there. But then be hoping, praying, thinking, plodding forward into the future to find that forever home. But try to do it as soon as you can, because there's something special about staying in one place.
I agree, and I think, too, sometimes you need a strategy just to get into the home market, and so what you said, I could see that that might give access. And do builders like you, I know our first home loan was a VA loan, wasn't it, or did they change that?
I don't remember. Could have been, but it was a loan.
They had reasonable down payments and all. So much different from today. Do you recommend any certain kind of option when it comes to young people or people of any age looking to buy a house financially there?
Yeah, I think qualifying for some of those first-time home buyer loans are very important, very strategic, and I definitely recommend that. I do remember hearing about and growing up in the 80s here during the Carter era when interest rates went way up towards 20%. It was a similar situation. Young couples, was kind of overwhelming thinking about getting into a home. And I do remember, as Shel said earlier, my dad told me about the harder times. My grandpa Herb moved here from Chicago, where he was ahead of 100 carpenters and very successful in Chicago, to come to Montana, where he had to pinch and scrape. And he ended up, he told me he never turned down a job. The industry that I cut my teeth in as a young man is very different. It's full of opportunity. And so my dad would ride his 10-speed with two little boys, and all the way across town to work at a wood shop, because my grandpa Herb, didn't have a ton of work at the time. And I think the most important thing is, psychologically, you really need to set your sight on something, set goals, like we've been talking about, and then just buckle down and sacrifice and plod forward and just save up for that down payment and save up to try to get into a home. I do think it's an incredibly worthwhile endeavor, because it's not just about creating equity. There's something that's incredibly rewarding, and to be connected to a piece of land, to a home, to a house. And I just say, hey, set your goals and then go for them, and don't believe it's out of reach.
And learning to love what needs to be done, I think, is very important in that.
As the journey. As you're talking, I'm thinking about we've in our old age here have owned four homes. We rented before that. Into our mid 20s to late 20s, but every house that we have gotten into has appreciated in value. First, we only lived in 3 years in Kansas City, but we made money off that in selling it. And then we went to Oklahoma City, and I did something strange, which I think people have to be as creative as they can. There was a historical preservation area in the city. And homes are pretty expensive and very old, most of them. But we kind of drove through there and dreaming about what would it be nice if we lived here. And we noticed one home that it was a great home, and it looked maybe not quite as kept up. And so, long story short, we just knocked on the door and asked, do you know any homes for sale? Long story short, again, it turned out that an older lady had that home. Her daughter was taking care of her. We ended up getting that home, but it was during the Carter era, and our first loan was at this. I think it was a horrible amount, but we were able to refinance that. I think two or three times over the next few years, until it became something much more affordable. And but anyway,
it needed so much work, but it was in a historical preservation neighborhood. It was the first neighborhood built west of the Mississippi.
It was originally a golf course.
That was mm-hmm. built around a park or a golf course. It had a little creek running through it, and it was right in the middle of town.
Built in the late 20s.
But yeah. It was a wonderful old house, and that was a really special thing to fix up. I remember there was the grungiest rug you've ever seen. Turned gray all across the living room and the dining room, and we pulled it up and found the most beautiful hardwood floors. It was like a hidden treasure. So, anyhow, that was one story about, that was right at that time you mentioned, Michael, when the interest rates were so high. But we found that house, and we did buy at that rate, but it was only a couple of months later we were able to refinance at a much lower rate. So sometimes, like you said, you just have to be creative and just, you know, keep your options open, because there again, getting back to what Shel said, it's the home is part of the heart. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good strategy for a young couple, especially here in the Gallatin Valley, in this time when a lot of young people look at the prospect of owning a home and just think it's out of reach. Is maybe find a fixer-upper, and especially a young couple. I mean, how many movie scenes are there where the young couple's like working on the house and tearing out this and painting that and getting a little paint on each other and taking something, fixing it up, putting a personal touch on it, and then watching that value increase as you continue to take care of it. You make it more and more beautiful as you live in it. And it doesn't go downhill or backwards and get worn down, but you can see that sense of a pride, I suppose.
Yes.
As you take care of it. And then so many young couples, I have a handful of friends right now trying to get into a home, first-time home. And they're like, well, I don't know. I think maybe we should wait. And, oh, there could be a bubble. Or, you know, a lot of these, you know, I think it's important to watch the market and think through that. But a lot of people just get crippled psychologically. And I think they need to just take that step often and go for it and dream big and then work hard, and it pays off. It really does.
Oh, absolutely. What would you recommend? I know that having been able to find a home in wonderful neighborhoods, that the place you buy a home also is important for the value. And so would you and Shel give us a little instruction about what one should live for in a neighborhood or in the countryside that will ensure your home value just goes up?
Well, I mean, if you think about it, for the first-time buyer, sometimes your options aren't much. You know, what you could qualify for, what you can afford, may be in an area where you don't necessarily, you know, desire to raise kids or to live. And you got to start somewhere. But as you're thinking more long-term, forever home, you got to think about what's really important to you. Is it really important to you that the kids are able to play safe in and around the house, be able to go to and fro from, you know, their friends' houses or to school, be able to ride their bike to school? You know, what is your unique situation? What are your needs? And then I think in the Gallatin Valley, it's such a special place here. Wherever you end up moving, there are more desirable places, but you have to do something. So you got to get started somewhere. Mm-hmm. So make your home the most beautiful home you can. Keep the yard kept. Drive, you know, and then it has an effect. It has a contagious effect even on your neighbors at times. You know.
And we've always liked the verbiage or phrase, don't despise the humble beginnings, basically. It's, you know, it's okay to just start somewhere and be thankful and carry on from there.
Also, like our older home, fixing it all up saved a home, made it into, you know, a place that'll be around another 100 years. And so it's reinventing and making things whole again. However, I tell you, you can't beat how much fun it is to build a house, especially with Michael and Shel.
Thank you, because it's, you know, as the saying goes, it's not always a fun experience for couples. It can be very stressful, a lot of decisions to make, but it's incredibly rewarding, and hopefully your builder can really help you through the process and make it just a blast.
Absolutely. Also, there's something special you guys have. I wanted to hear all about your cabin up in the woods, because a lot of people might like to take a trip and stay in that cabin. Can you tell us all about it?
Sure. We are builders and designers and creators, and we just love being those artist co-creators alongside God, who's the ultimate artist, the creator. And one of the most incredible places to go is the high country, or sometimes people call it God's country. So up in the high country of Cook City, Montana, we have a cabin that we were able to build together, Shel and I, and we spent a lot of days out in the camper up there with the girls. We have 4 daughters working on that place, and it is incredibly rewarding because people come and stay at our house now when we're not there, and the young families that go into Yellowstone or go up to the Beartooth Highway or just spend time in the Beartooth Mountains up there, when I get to talk to these families and see these kids and just having the time of their life, it's so rewarding. We have, you know, we just had a new picture here of a sow grizzly with her 2 cubs sitting right on the hot tub deck. And it's just an incredible place. It's really rewarding to just go up there and spend some time. So that's in Cook City, Montana.
Is there like a website or a brochure, or how does one find out about this?
Yeah, you could look at our lodging up there through YellowstoneGetaway.com.
So to me, it sounds like it's very much of a total wilderness kind of experience.
It really is. It's a unique place where there's a handful of mining claims that, you know, are being built on, but it's a real niche in the middle of between the Beartooth Wilderness, and it's right on the edge of Yellowstone Park. It's on the northeast entrance going into Yellowstone Park. And so you're right there, maybe 10, 15 minutes away from the Lamar Valley, which is considered the kind of like the Serengeti of North American wildlife watching. And it's an incredible, incredible place. I put on hundreds of miles of hiking in the park, just seeing some truly wild, unique, and amazing unfoldings as I've gone. I mean, stories are coming up on wolf pups and bears, and just it's incredible. It really is a special place in the United States.
And so how many people could stay in the cabin? Is it for a small family, or could you bring...
Well, it's actually... we love having like family reunion type gatherings up there, because there's 3 separate entrances with 3 separate kitchens. But there's also 1 larger unit where you can all get together and spend time together, but you can also have some time apart in your own rental, I suppose. So it's 20 people total, so can stay at the lodge.
So it'd be great for a family reunion.
Oh, I think it's incredible for a family reunion.
Or a wedding. Yeah, I could see.
Yeah, we have a lot of requests for weddings. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do have it's right on the Sobeute Creek. It's a beautiful backdrop, and right under Republic Peak, so there's...
Do you and the girls get to go and stay there sometimes, Shell?
Oh, we do. One of our favorite times is over the 4th of July. It's really a special time. Really a special time in
Yeah, it's like going back into the old time, you know, America, where the local fire department raises a big flag and then puts on the local firewood show. And it's really, really down home, down to earth, old world America.
Street dance.
Fourth of July.
How close is it to Cook City?
What was that, Arliss?
How close is it to Cook City?
Oh, probably a quarter mile.
Oh, it is Cook City.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like you're right in town, just because we are at the end of the Bannock Trail on the Cook City side. So it feels like you're out of town, but you're very close, relatively.
You know, I love that. You have great access, but you also have that wilderness setting. Oh, perfect. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Cook was voted one of the greatest small town in America. So don't be misled by the city part of it. It's a very, very small town in a very remote area, kind of at the end of the road.
Mm-hmm.
We traveled through there, I think it was 2 summers ago, with our kids who live in New York, who came here, and it was great coming up from, like going to Billings and turning off north there toward the Yellowstone and up the Beartooth Highway. The grand tour. Yeah, it was great.
It's so beautiful.
Yeah.
Beartooth Highway.
I was going to ask on another aspect of this discussion. There have been a lot of changes economically across the United States recently, and there have been a lot of tariffs enacted. Has that had much impact on your business, Michael? Have the costs risen for supplies?
Yes, costs have risen for supplies, but it's very difficult to pinpoint at times where they're coming from. You definitely see it. Definitely see a cost increase with the tariffs, but we've been on a pretty steady trajectory of cost increase prior to the tariff, so it seems like it seems kind of normal these days, just with the going through COVID and out prices is just constantly going up. It's really hard to keep up with it.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask, in your profession, what are barriers that you run up against, whether it be taxes or permits or finding people to work? What are the barriers in your job?
Well, the barriers often do revolve, especially for most people. Of course, we're building higher-end mountain homes now, and there are people who've had made a good living or inherited money, but the budget and the timeline are often the challenge, and so with these costs, it's incredible at times to consider just how much work it takes just to stay up on the increase of costs with the bidding aspect of the home. But my number one challenge is always finding good quality people to work. So that, especially in this valley, there's a shortage of really good quality, hardworking people. So that's the number one challenge for me, is the labor workforce.
Yeah, I found that to be true across the whole area of building. Back to the Forbes article, they said that approximately $170 billion in funding has been going to efforts to deport people who are undocumented, which many of our building workers have been, and that they will take away 700,000 to 1 million workers over this current situation, and that ends up being about 23% of construction laborers, because that many don't have legal status, but you see them everywhere being the hardest workers possible on the hottest days or the coldest days. And yeah, it's so unfortunate that we're losing so many.
Yeah, it's definitely a, especially I've been working in Big Sky for the last 5 years, and I have a lot of friends who are bidding on some of the larger housing projects in the Meadow area. And unfortunately, they have lost a handful of jobs to some of the out-of-state companies who do get a lot of those workers you were talking about. But you do notice a difference when the local workforce builds a home versus that influx, those out-of-state companies. And I think it's we're in a transition time with a lot of the changing in the workforce. It's harder to get those illegal workers. And I do think that's important, that we do need to have legal workers who are rooted and connected in the community. But it is at times hard to find help, for sure. And so it's always going to be a challenge, especially with that change that you had mentioned in the deportations.
Mm-hmm. Well, they also said that a number of those people are legally here, even though they're undocumented and not citizens, because they have work permits. And maybe those are some of the folks that would be good to come to a community and be locals with us.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I have a handful of friends who have been going through the immigration process for years, and they're finally, you know, we wrote letters for them, just trying to show their connectivity, that, you know, the process has been in play for a while now. And it is a hard thing to become a U.S. citizen. It is a challenge.
How do people get skilled in your area? I think there are more and more people, as I read, that are not college-bound per se, but are bound to work in skilled trades. How does one go about getting the skills? You grew up in where you almost learned them naturally. You had to work at it, but it was what everybody did. How does one get into learning? Are there trade colleges, or what is there?
Yeah, there's a lot of different apprenticeships, especially with plumbing and electrical, HVAC, where you have to put in so many hours and you go through that process. But really, it comes down to, you know, as a young man, I learned a lot of what I learned was caught, not taught. So I saw what my grandfather and my father were doing, and they had worked so long together that they rarely had to talk and communicate. But just being willing to learn, being teachable, and having that humility, it's like, take the time to learn a skill, learn a trade, and so you can apply to a lot of different employment options of apprenticeships, but trying to find somebody who's good at what he does or what she does, and that person loves what they do and it has a jovial, joyful attitude while they're at work. That is a powerful thing. If you can enjoy what you do while you're acquiring the skill, but put in your time, cut your teeth. Like, don't think you got to have it all today. I mean, that's our culture. Our society is very much instant everything, and we can just, you know, search this or that and hit the AI information and just plug it straight in. You think you have it all at your tips, but you need to take the years in the construction industry to learn the skill from, you know, that master craftsman, so to speak. You need to maybe even take a couple extra years to develop that skill, where you may be able to go in a different direction to make more money. Sometimes you need to value the skill and that mentorship more than the dollar, because in the long run, you will be better off.
Exactly. So there is one program nationally called the National Institute for Construction Excellence, or NICE, N-I-C-E, and they offer programs and events for young people and talk about potential construction careers. So they began in high school and junior high teaching people some of these skills. And so that also is something that people could look into and schools could look into. I know we had the builders here at one of the high schools who were partnering with a local builders company, builders supply company, and they were building the tiny homes so that the kids would learn every aspect, the plumbing, the electrical wiring, and they were doing it in small homes that people could then purchase. But there are some programs, but it made me want to ask Michael if you and Shell had thought about having an internship or apprenticeship. Would you work with young people or mentoring for young people? Is that part of your business, or would you recommend they where they could go?
It is part of my business. You know, now, let me put it this way. So going back to the way I was the way I was raised on the job site, a lot of times my dad and my grandpa were just such hard workers and very efficient. So they may have felt like they didn't have time to explain this or that, or they realized that, hey, he'll learn by watching. But so what I'm trying to say is a lot of companies may not take that time to try to train their employees because they're chasing that bottom line, just having to keep the production going. But now where I'm at, as I love taking young guys, typically guys come into the construction industry, and I take them, and I do want to pour into them as much as I can. I'm not all about keeping them down and trying to make money off of them, but it's more about that mentorship. I want them to have a skill where they can provide for a family, they can buy a home, build a home themselves, and I absolutely love that part of it. And I love making work fun, making it enjoyable. I mean, you're creating, you're an artist. It's not all blue skies, and you know, sometimes it's really challenging, especially in Montana building. But you can even learn to love that. You can push through it. And I love mentoring, discipling young people. And I would consider even working with an apprenticeship program, because I think it's so valuable to pass the torch to the next generation. I think it's so rewarding to help people. And it's not always possible. You know, for many, the last two decades, especially the last decade, Shell and I have been grinding, sacrificing, working incredibly hard. And now looks like we may just be able to just be in a different season of life. And we really value that concept of helping, passing the torch, teaching, investing in the next generation. We're very long game minded, generationally minded couple.
We love hearing that. And, you know, it's like, I cannot imagine something more satisfying than starting, like you said, digging a hole for a basement. And then you end up building a home on top of that, a beautiful, functional lasting home that has to feel marvelous, just marvelous. And I know you get paid for it, but I think the biggest payoff might be in the creating. And I think what you're saying is so true, that that same great joy and pride would be watching somebody you'd worked with be able to take off and do the same thing that you're able to do, which is create a beautiful home for people to love and enjoy.
Yeah, I have a little story. I built with a young man up in Big Sky our other project for Mountain Lux. It's kind of similar to the Cook City project. And it's just a really special place to go to. But I built that with a young man named Clancy. And he has since found the love of his life and got married, moved to a small town in Ohio and Indiana. And it's so fun watching him via Facebook or Instagram, but watching all the pictures, you know, whether they're text or online, of his skills in action, providing for his family. It's so rewarding. And it was really fun working with him, and then now seeing him start this next chapter and being a co-creator artist.
Mark, I was wondering, of the skills that are needed, is there a list of priority demands, like which are the hardest to find? And could you tell us a few of those? Like, I know people don't understand probably how many people come and go working on a house. It's not just one, you know, five people to build a house. It's probably many more than that. But what are some of the skills that are really, really needed here?
Well, you know, you had mentioned, I think, Suzanne, you had mentioned the kind of people who pursue excellence. I think that's an eye for detail, a steady hand. You know, you need to be able to cut it straight, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of that comes down to confidence and strength. I mean, those are things that you do need. But you also need technique, and so that's where that mentorship really comes in. Work smarter, not harder, so to speak. And then some of the tools we have today make life so much easier. You see the guys unloading their tool trailer these days, and versus listening to my grandpa said that, okay, Mike, when I was working in the 30s in Chicago, you know, we'd in the 40s, we'd get together and we'd all roll out our wooden tape measures, so to speak, and we would calibrate them. You could tighten them up or loosen them and make sure they're all the same length. And it was just a different world building. And you really needed skill back then. You really needed that training for years. But now the tools and the technique is always going to be important, but the tools are making our job way easier. And it's an eye for detail, a desire to learn, and a pursuit of excellence. Just want to make it great.
Tell me this, is AI going to impact this industry?
Boy, I've been thinking about this a lot and fascinated by it. I don't pretend to understand the depths of what AI will be able to accomplish, but I can think that in the design process, AI is going to have dramatic repercussions, I guess, taking away a lot of the long hours of the draftsman, the architect who's designing on the computer. I do think it's going to impact our industry. But I think it's going to, in the labor force aspect of it, I mean, you just can't really replace. You're going to have more equipment, more automation, but you're still going to need those hands-on builders. Mm-hmm. And so, mm-hmm. Yeah. Hard to say, Arliss. It's a changing world.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
I see AI maybe being useful if you're building a 50-story office building where everything has to be squared away. And so, you know, they might be able to give you numbers and crank out plans for that, but right. Nothing could replace what you do in a special home for people who come to you. So,
yeah, I kind of, I shouldn't laugh, but the bidding process and a lot of even the laborious, the long hours in the design process of, I actually am looking forward to AI's assistance. One of the challenging things in construction is, you know, most people do not have a good bidding strategy in place. So oftentimes the cost overruns are some of the most psychologically damaging parts of building a home. Like it, when the budget is overrun, it makes us, no matter how much fun you're having picking things out, it changes everything. So if we can keep our costs more accurate through AI, I say, hey, all for it. Use the technology where we can.
You know, I've always known that you and Shell are very strong faith-based believers, and I know that the scriptures tell us Jesus was a carpenter. And so I always think, wouldn't it be great to see something that he made? I know that it would be absolutely perfection. And I've always thought if I were not a speech language pathologist, I might prefer to be a carpenter, just working with wood and
building things. Don't give her a hammer, please.
Well, I do remember growing up, there was an old country song, "If I Was a Carpenter, Would You Marry Me Anyway?" And so there are different views on being a carpenter. A lot of people may think they want an office job and they don't want to lift those heavy boards. It's not for everybody, but I would say I find it incredibly rewarding to be a carpenter. And, you know, if you think, hey, my brother is a mechanic, and they have kind of the pejorative terms for a mechanic, and they have, and I may be a sliver picker or whatever, maybe a pejorative, you know, a diss on the trade, but it really is a glorious thing, and it's come through the ages, and that term, architecton, that master builder, the craftsman, the tecton, the artisan, is an incredible thing to be able to craft something with your hands. And it's very rewarding. Even my wife spoke about it earlier. You know, she has pictures of me up on the roof building our home that we live in now, while she's out in the, I guess, in the camper. We lived pretty modestly for a while trying to get this home built. And it's just really special to her, knowing that her husband worked really hard. She worked really hard on it with me, and it was really rewarding. So, yeah, Jesus being a carpenter is a very special connection with me, for me, and my family legacy of being a third-generation carpenter, or maybe even a fourth. Yeah, it's a special thing.
We couldn't agree more. Thank you both for being with us
this
night. Yes, I
hate to see this hour come to an end. Wow, thank you. And I guess
thanks for having us on.
We could say
thank you so much.
We could say amen. Gallatin Valley.
Amen.
Gallatin Valley. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.